In just a moment, we'll be talking with one of the creators of one of the movies that'll be shown this week as part of the Overlooked Film Festival, now in its third year here in Champaign-Urbana. That in just a second. But before we do that, we do want to remind you here, this is going to be your last opportunity this week to show your support for this program, and not only for this program, but for other shows you listen to here on AM 580. One of the times we sit down in front of the microphones and say, folks, the reason public broadcasting works is that people like you are willing to pay part of the bills. So that's a simple and straightforward message. If you're not a supporter of the station, we hope that this morning you would do that. You can do it right now, as a matter of fact, by calling us. 244-9455 is the number. One of our producers, Jack Brighton, is in Pledge Central. And, Jack, we actually have something that we're offering as a kind of incentive for people to pledge this morning, or at least to give us a call. We have a drawing for a very special item. And, here we go. I'm sorry. There we go. There's Jack.
Hi, David.
That's
yeah. This is a very special, actually, it's a ticket to the concert tonight at Cranert by Ravi Shankar and his daughter Anushka. Ravi Shankar, of course, the master sitar player from India, who you and I have both seen in years past, and it's a concert that is just going to be outstanding. We have one ticket that we will give to the first person who calls during this hour to our pledge line, 244-9455, with a pledge of $60 or more to support Focus 580 and all the great programs here on WILL.
And this concert's sold out, so there's no way that you're going down to the box office and getting a ticket.
Yeah, and actually, this is a second row ticket, by the way.
Oh, yes, so it's a great seat. One of our colleagues here had it and said, you know, I can't use this. Would you like to give it away? And we said, sure, we can do that. Maybe that gets some people excited about giving us a call. So that's the deal. Again, what is it we're asking people to do?
A pledge of $60 or more, the first person with a pledge during this hour, 217-244-9455. You can make it a credit card pledge if you'd like, and that'll go instantly into the Friends of WILL pot and make you a friend of WILL. And you'll also get this ticket to see the concert by Ravi Shankar and his daughter Anushka.
All right. Well, we'll check back with you in a little while, Jack. Thanks for being with us today. If you like movies, Champaign-Urbana is a good place for you to be this week because, once again, we are hosting Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. It's now in its third year. He selects a number of movies that he thinks are worth seeing and ones that perhaps, as the title of the festival suggests, were overlooked. And then he shows the film and also invites people who were involved in making these movies, performers and directors and writers and producers. And we're fortunate here to have with us this morning one of the writers of a film that will be shown as part of the festival tomorrow night. The movie is called Jesus' Son, and it will be shown tomorrow night at 7. And these showings are at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. David Urrutia is our guest. Also, we were going to have his partner in production and writing on the film, Elizabeth Cothrell, and unfortunately something came up and she couldn't be with us. But we're glad that he could come and spend a little time talking about the movie. If you have questions, certainly you can call and talk with him here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, if you'd like to be a part of the conversation, 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I understand that when you and Elizabeth formed your company, Evenstar Films, the first thing that you bought was this book by Dennis Johnson, Jesus' Son.
That's right.
What attracted you to this as a movie project?
Well, Elizabeth had been reading the stories. Jesus' Son is a collection of short stories that Dennis Johnson wrote over a number of years, and they were all individually published in different magazines like Harper's or The New Yorker or Paris Review. And Elizabeth had been a writer pretty much all her life and was always looking at new American fiction primarily, and had been reading these stories and loving them. And when they were collected and published in 92, she gave me the book. We've been friends and working together in the theater for about 12 years now. And so she gave me the book, and I read it. Actually, I started reading it at first. And I was at a particular point in my life where the first story depressed me so much that I actually put the book down. I recognized how brilliant it was, but it was taking me into such dark places that I really couldn't handle it at the time. So I put it aside. A few months later, I picked it up and read it all the way through again and absolutely loved it. So fast forward about 4 or 5 years, we started the film company. We began looking for projects. And initially, we thought of another book by Dennis Johnson called Angels, which was actually his first novel that he published in 1979. And beautiful story, very simple, few characters. We thought, wow, we could make a good, low-budget film out of this book. So we contacted his agent and found out that Angels was not available, had been under option for, almost since the book was published. And so we, Elizabeth said, well, what about Jesus' Son? And at first I was, while I loved the book, my memory of it was, number one, that it was short stories, and I wasn't immediately aware of how we could turn it into a cohesive film. So I read it again, and we talked about it, and began to see that, you know, it could be a really incredible film if we could find a way to tie it together. And certainly the story was beautiful, and what it had to say, we thought, should be out there in the world. And we each had individual reasons and personal reasons of how this story affected us. So we inquired about those rights. They were available. Actually, they were just becoming available. And other people were bidding on it, and we threw a hat in the ring, and ultimately we ended up with it about 3 months later.
Yeah. I understand that it was a challenge. Writing the film was a challenge. It actually took a couple of years. And that, as you say, the book is a collection of stories, but in one review that I read of the book, the reviewer said, well, yes, it's a collection of stories, but it's really a novel. Because it follows, it has this central character, and it follows him. It does have a thread. It has a place. It has a starting place. It has an ending place. There is an arc to this story, and so it's there. But it sounds as if for you, it was still a challenge to find a way to pick among these stories and to construct a kind of narrative that viewers could follow.
Yeah, absolutely. There is. I mean, he does. While Dennis never intended it to work together, the stories do have an arc, and they follow this man's recovery, redemption, number of words I could use. So it is there, but the options, I guess, for adapting a group of stories that do have a central character, one of the things we could have done is just flattened it out completely, just sort of put all the stories together, or just been inspired by the stories and created some sort of complete linear sort of typical three-act structure. Mm-hmm. But what interested us about this project, besides the story itself, was the opportunity to create a different type of structure. And I don't want to say that it's a structure that we invented, because we certainly didn't. There are other films out there that use similar techniques. But we chose to keep it episodic. And while we didn't use ultimately all the stories, we did use a number of them. We combined them. We moved them around. But it was a challenge. We needed to find a way to keep it together enough, or maybe more so than the book, to make a little bit more of a cohesive, linear narrative. Yeah.
Well, that's – and for people who are not familiar with the movie, and I don't want to – give too much away, so that because I'm encouraging people to go see it. Or it's also possible to rent the film, so people can see it. But basically, it all revolves around a particular character who is has a lot of problems with drug and alcohol, sort of involved in petty crimes to support his habits. Is kind of a lost soul, somebody who is more acted upon than acts in his life. Yeah. And yet over time, what happens is the guy manages to get himself together, maybe catch a few breaks. Mm-hmm. And it is really a very optimistic story, I think, by the point that it ends.
Yeah, I think so, too. That's actually what attracted us to this is, you know, his redemption, his recovery. we weren't interested in telling a story about drugs. And I don't, while there is drug use in the film, it's not focused on the mechanics of addiction and certainly recovery, what it takes to recover, is in no way the focus of this film at all. Mm-hmm. It's really his recovery, his redemption, his the light that I think he sheds on his own life and those around him.
And I think I was really struck by one line in particular. It's one of those experiences that sometimes you watch a movie and someone says something and it's almost like the writer or the director is reaching out and grabbing you and saying, "This is the point." And I don't know if I'm overdoing, but Holly Hunter is in the film and she has a relatively short part. Mm-hmm. It comes near the end of the film, and there's one sort of particularly funny. She and the hero meet at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and there's one sort of particularly funny thing where she's talking about her various husbands and boyfriends, all of which have died.
Right.
And there's a lot of black comedy in this movie. But the thing that struck me is that she's here talking to the lead character and about what has happened to all of these guys, and she says they were people just like us, only unluckier. Mm-hmm. And to me, I thought, well, yeah, that definitely is the thing, that the people in this movie, you know, it's the kind of thing where it encourages you to think about how, you know, they're but for the grace of,
right,
you know, whatever, that could be you, that how many people are just a couple of bad breaks away from being a really bad place.
Right.
And I think you're encouraged to you know, to think of the lead character with some affection in a way, that he's not an evil person. He's
definitely
just the guy that's just lost and you know, took a couple of wrong turns, and that's all it takes sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. He is just a guy, and that was also really important to us. We didn't want to portray this sort of cool, you know, druggy guy, you know, sort of hip, you know, good. Well, even though Billy Crudup is very good looking, we didn't want that type of mystique. And I think as played brilliantly by Billy Crudup, you do get just this sort of, he's bumbling, he makes mistakes, he screws up, he's, you know, his nickname is something that I don't think I can repeat here.
It's a family show, we can't say it, yeah.
But, you know, it's well-deserved in a certain way, but it's also given to him, I think, with a certain amount of affection. And so he is just, he's this guy that's just trying to make his way through life.
He's a screw up, but right. but he's sort of a sweet, kind of goofy screw up. So
yeah.
It's sort of hard to, you sort of want to shake your head in a way, but
right.
it's hard to dislike him. And actually, I was sort of surprised, and I looked at a lot of reviews of the movie, and people seem to really have very different takes on that character.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my response was maybe a little bit more positive than mm-hmm. some.
Yeah, we did get a lot of different takes on it. That's true.
But I'm sure another actor, in another actor's hands, it would have been a very different sort of thing. And somehow he manages to, and it's I think probably a tribute to his ability that it doesn't really look like he's acting.
No, not at all. He's an incredible actor, and for those of you out there who are familiar at all with his work, you know that he's such a chameleon. He's different in every single film. It's just it's really extraordinary what he does.
The our guest here this morning on Focus 580, David Urrutia, he's one of the writers of the film Jesus' Son, one of the show's films being shown as part of Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Fest. And if you're interested in seeing the movie, it will be shown tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That's at the Virginia. And if for some reason you can't get to the festival, it is available to – you can rent it. So mm-hmm. if you haven't seen the movie, you might want to take a look at it. And, of course, questions are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I'm interested in going back to maybe talking a little bit about the narrative structure and about how now we're starting to see more stories being told in a non-linear way.
Mm-hmm.
Because definitely this happens where the movie opens and we see a series of events that leads to another place, and then we get credits, and then we go to the place where he was going, but then the story stops and he takes us back, and so the movie moves back and forth in time
mm-hmm.
in a way that at one point, you know, movies just wouldn't do this. Movies were chronological.
Right.
This thing happens, then this thing happens, then this thing happens. Well, we have a lot of movies that don't do that anymore. And now we have a popular thriller
right.
out that actually tells the story backward. It starts at the beginning and then goes back,
right.
Which in some cases I think asks a lot of the audience. But maybe it is the case that now people are getting used to that idea that, okay, I'm going to have to kind of pay attention here to when we're talking about, and there's no guarantee that we're going to follow a straight line.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there something about that way of telling a story that you think is particularly interesting?
Well, I find it interesting, but in terms of this particular film, we also think that it was natural to tell this story this way. We didn't write this film because we thought it'd be a cool thing to do, or because, you know, Quentin Tarantino had done such a good job of it in Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. The stories are written in the first person, and you get a sense from reading it that a number of years have passed since these events. So you do have the sense of an older, perhaps wiser person telling you the events of his youth. So we do use voiceover in the film, and we wanted the other thing that happens in the books that we tried to use a couple of times, even though it was a little more difficult, is that there's a number of direct addresses in the stories that directly address the reader, which are pretty shocking when you get to them, because that doesn't happen too often either. Mm-hmm. But what we wanted to sort of convey is the feeling that you were sitting around with this guy and he was telling you some of the important events in his life in real time. So we wanted the voiceover to have a feeling not of sort of this older man sort of taking you back in a very logical way, but of someone sitting around and telling you a story and in the middle say, oh, wait a minute, I forgot to tell you. Back when this happened too, and that's mm-hmm. important, so we can go on. So Billy did such a wonderful job in the voiceover of making it feel like it's happening at the moment, not something he recorded in a studio, you know, at some point, but that he's almost watching the film with you and is in control of where the film goes at that moment. Yeah. That's what we wanted to convey anyway.
And that he's a little bit more the way that people do tell stories in not such a disciplined linear way.
Exactly.
It's as if you were sitting down with a character and he was relating things that had happened. And just as you said, he might be telling you a story and then he might get to a point and say, oh, wait a minute, there's something else you need to know
right.
here that I didn't tell you about,
right.
which can then take you back to a different place.
Right.
So it has that kind of conversational narrative quality to it that
right.
seems very real, just the way that people are when they talk and tell stories.
Right. There are other aspects of it too that you some of the times you may not be quite sure if he's telling you the truth or what's being made up or what he clearly remembers, or maybe he remembers something but did it actually happen that way or did he actually see that? You don't know.
Yeah. And I guess too that after you had produced the script that had this sort of unusual feature, and you were going around trying to get some money to make the movie, that was one thing, in addition to the drug use that maybe made some people uncomfortable, that narrative structure,
yeah.
the fact that it was unusual, made people resist the idea of giving you the money to make the movie.
Oh, really? We had a lot. That was the main thing. People, we did show the script to studios after we had finished it, and that was everyone who liked the script and we had meetings with, that was the thing that they were concerned about. What are you going to do? How are you going to make this work? And people were worried about it, and we had people interested. Ultimately, we had fortunately some money to bring to the table through our company, so we weren't looking to sell this project outright. Ultimately, we never could find a good match that would let us do the film the way we wanted to do it. So we worked a little bit harder and raised the rest of the money ourselves and just made the film that we wanted to make.
So how much does it cost to make this movie?
Can't tell. Less than Titanic.
Okay. Well, I know that it was made in just, like, what, 34 days? I couldn't believe that when I read that. Just a little bit more than a month.
Yeah, about 35 days. We shot about 7 weeks, 5-day weeks.
It must have been really grueling.
It was... This was the first film I come from theater. I've produced a lot of theater, but this is the first film I produced, and it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And we had a lot of very experienced crew people on it, and while none of them said it was the hardest film they worked on, they all said it was definitely one of the hardest. It was brutal, 18-hour days. We shot in the middle of winter, a lot of exterior scenes, a lot of night scenes. It was extremely cold, and it was it took its toll on everybody.
I like the film very much, and I think that you and your partner, I think in writing it, really did bring a lot. It's my understanding you brought a lot to it. For example, it is very faithful, it seems, to the spirit of the story. There is a lot of dialogue that just comes right out of the story. And yet at the same time, to make it the movie, you had to do a lot of work. You really, it sounds as if you really created also the female lead, who the character of Michelle, who's an important presence, as it's described, an important presence in the book, and yet she almost never speaks at all in the story. So you had to really create a character who could be a physical character, who could be a presence, and who had lines.
Right. Yeah. That was a challenge. Dennis does. There is a good amount of dialogue in some of the stories. Some of the stories are not dialogue driven at all. But Dennis Johnson has many talents and many strengths, and one of them happens to be his brilliant ear for dialogue and the turn of phrase. And the rhythms are so incredible, and it was a real challenge to try to match his rhythms, the way he has his characters talk, and especially to come up with a new person who would fit into this world.
And he apparently was happy about it. He felt you'd
We did the negotiation with his agent. We never talked to him. In fact, we were afraid of him because we held him in such high esteem. And after we'd had the project about 8 months, we get this call one day at the office, and I picked it up. He's like, "Hey, this is Dennis Johnson. How you doing?" And it's like, "Oh, fine." He said, "I was wondering why you never called me. don't you want to ask me some questions? Can I read the script?" And we had, we had heard stories that, it's his work, and we didn't want to, we didn't want to make him mad. We didn't want to, do anything. We had the option for 2 years, and we knew that, it was ours for that time, and, and then we had to either buy it or give it back to him. But so ultimately, after the first year, we had a draft that we felt comfortable enough with to take a chance. And if he hated it, we still had a year to raise the money to make the film. And if he liked it, he might be able to help us out. Mm-hmm. So luckily he liked it.
Well, we're about midway through our conversation with David Urrutia. He's one of the writers and also producers. Of the film Jesus Son, one of the movies that will be shown as part of Roger Ebert's Overlooked Film Festival. This is this particular movie you can see at the Virginia tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And it's also on DVD and video if you'd like to look at it. We want to take a second here to remind you that your support for the stations is a real important. More than 40% of the budget that takes to run this place comes from you. So we need the support of all the listeners that we can get. 244-9455 is the number to call. We also want to talk again with Maeve Riley, our editor of our program guide Patterns, who is in Pledge Central. I understand we still have no one has taken us up on that offer of that ticket for the sold-out concert tonight.
That's right. We have one ticket to the Ravi Shankar concert tonight at the Krannert Center. It begins at 8 p.m. in the Follinger Great Hall, and we want a pledge of $60. And if you give us a pledge of $60, we'll give you this ticket. The first person that calls with a pledge of $60.
Yeah, we're sorry we don't have two or more, but we just have one, and it is sold out.
It is sold out, so it would be a great opportunity to go see this show.
Yeah, it's a great seat, too. So he's performing with his daughter.
Right, and it sounds like a great show. There's been a lot of press about them in the News Gazette, and I've seen a couple things, and if no one else takes it, I think I might. So the number to call is 217-244-9455.
And of course, we do have some other reasons for you to contribute.
Sure.
If you contribute at the $40 basic level, of course, everybody who does that or above will have a year subscription to Patterns,
right,
our program guide. And we do have this thing that we call this new thing we call the member card,
right? And that's
which is pretty cool.
That's a great deal. For a pledge of $75 or above, it's a thank you gift. We're not selling the member card. It's a thank you gift for being a friend of WILL, and it entitles you to a 2-for-1 entree at a lot of area restaurants. That includes restaurants in Champaign, Urbana, Springfield, Danville, Decatur, throughout the whole WILL listening and viewing area. So that's another great incentive to call.
Okay, and we definitely need folks' help. We're kind of coming down to the wire here of this spring fundraising effort. We're raising the money that we'll use in our programming for next year. We do have a goal we want to meet by the end of the fiscal year, and this week we want to get as close to that goal as we possibly can. I think today's goal overall, $20,000. Do you know
how close we are right now? Hang on just a second.
I'm sorry. I sort of sprung that one on you. Well, I'll just take the opportunity to give the phone number again here while Maeve is going over and looking at the tote board. 244-WYLL or 9455. You can, by the way, pledge online if you like. You can go to our website at WILL.UIUC.EDU. That's the place you go if you want to listen. Of course, we're online 24 hours a day. We also have archives of past programs, Focus and Afternoon Magazine and Commodity Week. A lot of our shows are there. And if you would like, if it'd be more convenient for you, you can pledge on the website. Again, WILL.UIUC.EDU.
David, I'm sorry. I'm just going to jump in. We're just over $11,000. And like you said, we want to get to $20,000 by the end of today to keep us on target for our goal. The Ravi Shankar ticket has just been taken. But that's no reason why you shouldn't still continue to call.
There 217, are plenty of other reasons.
Yes, there are a lot of good reasons. 217-244-9455.
All right. Thanks, Maeve. We'll talk to you again in a little bit. We'd like to introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580, David Urrutia. He's one of the writers and producers of the film Jesus' Son, one of the movies being shown as part of the Overlooked Film Festival that Roger Ebert started doing here a couple of years ago. This is the third year. And if you'd like to see the movie, you can go over to the Virginia Theater tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and see it. And, of course, questions are welcome. 333-WILL or 9455, toll free, 800-222-WILL. You were fortunate to have a couple of very strong performers come and, and do short roles. Mm-hmm. Holly Hunter was one, and Dennis Hopper has a great – he was there apparently just one day.
Oh, yeah.
He did this thing with Billy. And as I was watching the movie, I'm thinking to myself, these guys are making this up. They're making it up as they're going along. And yet, I when I read the, one of the reviews I read of the book, quoted from that scene. So apparently that's word for word out of – the book.
That's from a story in the book called Steady Hands at Seattle General. And we don't set that part in Seattle. It's actually set in Chicago. But that particular story is all dialogue. I think there's a paragraph or so at the beginning of that story that kind of sets it up. But then it's just, it's all dialogue. It's just a scene. And so that was an easy adaptation for us.
And it's Billy Crudup and Dennis Hopper, and he's Hopper's sitting there, and Billy's shaving him.
Yes.
He's got a safety razor, and he's shaving, and they're just talking.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, man, these guys just, they just sat down, they're making this up. But that, I think that shows you something of the quality of the movie that does seem very genuine and almost spontaneous in its quality, and when in fact it was something that was very carefully written, and in doing it, I know that you stuck very close to the script. Nobody was almost nothing was improvised.
No, I don't know if there's any word. You know, we're talking about that scene that was improvised by either actor. It was pretty much verbatim.
Yeah, talking to my bullet hole.
Yeah, which is an incredible. That's one of those lines. You know, in writing this, we were faithful to the script, maybe more so than most people who adapt books or plays or whatever to the film. We were extremely faithful. We felt a tremendous responsibility, really, to preserve this work. And so consequently, the book was at our side. There was a third screenwriter, I should mention, named Oren Moverman, a very talented guy. So there were three of us. We hired Oren to help us with this particular project. But the book was constantly at our side. I mean, we never, ever put it down. It was a constant source of inspiration.
Yeah. Also, the author, Dennis Johnson, makes an appearance in the movie.
He does. He had told us he was actually down in Austin teaching down at UT, and he's taking some acting classes. And he's like, yeah, I'd like to do some acting. So he wanted to play, actually, the Dennis Hopper role. We had just signed the deal with Dennis, so that wasn't available. So there was another role that I don't want to give away, but he's incredible. And he showed up on set, and he's an amazing actor, just completely natural, is funny, did a great job.
There's a lot of black comedy in this movie, and that is one of the sections that's strange and bizarre, and yet it's very funny. I think mostly because it's it's such an absurd situation, and it's the way that the people in the situation react.
Yes.
Some with no emotion, some with extreme emotion,
right.
And people definitely watch for this. We'll say it's the emergency room segment.
Right.
We'll not say more than that, I guess.
Jack Black, who's an amazingly funny actor, has been in a lot of films lately, High Fidelity, and he does an incredible comedic job in this very important middle segment. He's very funny.
Mm. Very, very nice turn. Was it difficult to get a couple of people of the level of Holly Hunter, Dennis Hopper involved in the project?
You know, I'm embarrassed to say ultimately they kind of fell into our lap. We did a lot of work in the script stage and while we were raising funds to attract people who we thought would help us sell the film, which is, you know, the ultimate goal, and is to get it out there. So we sent the script out to a lot of people. And it's difficult for independent films, unless you're fully financed, to actually get people attached because agents generally want offers. And you have to say, well, yes, it is an offer. And they say, well, how much are you paying him and when are you shooting? And you say, well, we actually don't have the financing yet and we don't know when we're going to start because we don't have the money yet, but would he do it? And they say, well, come back to us when it's all said and done. And so we had a lot of that. Luckily, Billy was... You know, he was on board. We wrote the film with him in mind. Elizabeth knew him from their days at NYU. And he was gracious enough to say, yeah, I'll do it, you know, when you guys can get it together. Other people, Dennis Hopper, we actually sent the script to his agent. He never read it. They said he was too busy out of town. Then when we were in pre-production, we were out scouting. I remember we got a call. His agent said, you know, he finally read it, and if the part's still available... You know, he'd love to do it. Great. He was on board. Holly Hunter, we never sent the script to her. She was doing a play in New York. Again, we were in pre-production. We were a couple weeks away from shooting, and she was doing a play in New York, saw our screenplay backstage. Another actor had auditioned for it, and she was a huge fan of Dennis Johnson's and knew the book and asked to read the script. She took it home that weekend and read it. Her agent called us and said, you know, there's a part in this film that Holly Hunter would like to play, and is it cast yet? And if it isn't, would you consider using her? So, you know, she ended up in it that way. And Dennis Leary is a very similar situation. Mm-hmm. Just sort of, you know, came on board. Billy Crudup had done a small role in a film that Dennis Leary was in called Monument Avenue. And so Dennis Leary thought it'd be a great sort of return of the favor. So he came in and did it.
Billy Crudup now, because he's been in this Cameron Crowe movie, mm-hmm. probably now people will know him that wouldn't have before. Mm-hmm. But you think that other actors, less well-known actors than Holly Hunter and Dennis Hopper, could have played those parts and it would have been just as good a movie. But I imagine for you to be able to put their names on it, this is a good thing. Maybe will get people to pay attention to it that otherwise, if the stars were, if the performers here were less well known.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of independent filmmakers, you know, don't want to, you know, quote unquote, sell out by giving roles to stars undeservedly just because of the name. And I, in no way do I feel that we did. I think we got the best people to play those roles. We were fortunate that, you know, some of them do have a marquee value that certainly helped the film and helped the film in foreign territories where, you know, it's much more difficult to sell an independent film. And it helped us a lot, and we've done well in foreign territories.
Mm. Well, and then I think they really, it's a compliment, I'm sure, to them that they're there. The problem with very well-known performance is when you see them, in addition to seeing whatever they're doing, you're seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't never think about the fact that you're sitting there and thinking, hey, that's Dennis Hopper.
Right.
But I think to their credit, and Dennis Leary too, they're not there saying, hey, I'm Dennis Hopper.
Right.
Look at me. I'm being in this movie. And they're really, it's very, very understated mm-hmm. playing by all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you know, really all did a terrific job.
Yeah, I think so. And they all did work that was shocking in many ways. I mean, people who are familiar with Dennis Leary, I think when they see this film, will be surprised. It really, he's funny. There's definitely his humor is in there, but it's completely understated performance. It's brilliantly done. He's so moving and touching, and you can tell the affection that his character has for Billy's character and vice versa. And I think it wasn't easy in terms of fitting the schedule in for these people. It was easy because the film's episodic, and so they were all there for just a few days. They would come in, do their episode, and then leave. So that worked in our favor.
And two very strong leads, Billy Crudup, yeah, Samantha Morton. And to me, I think what really comes across from them and their performances is an incredible vulnerability, mm-hmm, in those characters, and a real, you know, when the scenes of the two of them have together, I think are very, very touching.
Yeah.
The relationship between the two of them, obviously very, very, very needy people and, mm-hmm, and needing each other. And as I said, very, very vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. Samantha Morton was another one that was, we were so incredibly lucky to get her. We were in the midst of writing Michelle and creating the character and kind of searching for exactly who she was. And my partner Elizabeth read an interview with Samantha Morton in Interview Magazine. She was promoting a film called Under the Skin. It's a small British film that she did. Happened to be playing nearby in New York. We went and saw it, and that was it. It was like, that's Michelle. She was British, but that was Michelle for us. And I wrote the rest of the role, or worked on it. I didn't write it myself, but she was the one that I used, my model. And we didn't think we could ever get her. She was British. Could she do an American accent? Who was she? You know, she wouldn't help us at all with financing. But as it turned out, right before we shot the film, our casting director is Woody Allen's casting director, and she said, well, you know, there's this girl, Samantha Morton, and we're like, oh my God, Samantha, could you get a script? So they sent a script, and she fell in love with it, and she came in and did a brilliant American accent. So, and it worked out. She went right from the Woody Allen film, Sweet and Lowdown, to us.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's right. You would never think that this was not an American girl.
Oh, she does it just perfectly. We did get a dialogue coach for her, but she has an amazing ear. And, you know, she did very little looping at the end, coming back and sort of fixing words that she had sort of screwed up with her British accent. It's like three or four, I think it was. She did such a good job.
Yeah. One of the things I read about the movie was that there's a commission of priests that go to Cannes and Venice and Berlin to the film festivals. And, and you think to yourself, oh, a rough job there, pretty rough assignment. They go and they go to the festivals, they watch the movies, and they give an award to that they think is the most inspiring story. And they gave the award to your movie. And I read that Elizabeth goes and collars one of these guys, the head of the guy. And, of course, she says, well, we're very pleased. This is very nice. But why us? And that they said that, in fact, they really found it a very, you know, that the thing that the character goes through isn't, they didn't say it was a very inspirational story.
Yeah, this was at the Venice Film Festival in 1999. The award's called the Ecumenical Award. And he said, you know, this film, we were protested by a group of nuns in New Jersey when we were shooting this because they thought the title of the film was blasphemous. They didn't, you know, they didn't know the story at all. But so to get this award from these priests was quite shocking. But they said, you know, life is hard, but this guy is searching for peace, you know, and searching for humanity, and that's what we look for. Interesting. There's another film. We won at Venice, we won the Ecumenical Award, and we won the Baby Golden Lion, which is given by young Italian filmmakers. It's sort of their Golden Lion. And the last film at Venice to win both the Ecumenical Award and the Baby Golden Lion and not win the Golden Lion was another film that's here, 2001, A Space Odyssey. Won that back when it was at Venice. So it was a great honor, actually, to get that award.
Yeah, we're come down to the point where we have maybe about 5 or 6 minutes. Just want to tell people who are listening that if you feel like you want to call in, you got questions, something on your mind, you can certainly do that. And our guest is David Urrutia. He is one of the writers and producers of the film Jesus Son. It's playing as part of the Overlook Film Fest, Roger Ebert's festival, tomorrow night at 7. And maybe we should mention that the title of the film comes from the title of the book that it came from, right, which comes from a song by Lou Reed,
right.
And that there's no in the movie there's no reference to it. This has no religious outright religious
right.
angle. It doesn't really almost have anything to do with the movie,
no.
except that, well, this is the title of the book that
right.
the stories come from.
Yeah, if there is a connection, I think it's you know, this guy walks among the sort of the maybe the outcasts and sees the good in them and is searching for his own recovery in a way out. So if there is a connection, I think there are very spiritual themes in the book, and you know, we tried to convey them in the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's loose. There's no outright yeah. religious thing.
There's a very similar images open and close the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There's Billy on a road,
mm-hmm.
and in the beginning, it must be sunset. It's dark,
yes.
and it's actually very beautiful. The colors in the shot are very beautiful because it's all really sort of blue and
mm-hmm.
and hazy. And in the end, it's daytime, the sun shining.
Mm-hmm.
And in both cases, you're the camera. It's sort of a master shot, and
mm-hmm.
it just looks down the road,
mm-hmm.
and that sort of says something about where this character goes over in the arc of the
mm-hmm.
story, from where he starts to where he ends. And as we mentioned, it has a very optimistic, very positive ending. Was there anybody who said to you, "Oh, and this is somehow too nice," that the ending is too positive?
No, we haven't had that comment. And no, I think it maybe because it goes to such dark places, I think, in the course of the film. But also, it's not wrapped up completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he mm-hmm. finds Holly Hunter, they're together, but you don't get the sense that they're going to be together forever. It's a little open-ended enough, I think, that all the ends aren't really tied up. And you're not even sure that this guy is completely recovered, or will he completely recover? But you get a sense that he's on the road to something. He's bettering his life, and he's making an attempt.
Yeah, that's almost anybody can do. That part of the human condition is that we all have our disabilities that we struggle with,
mm-hmm.
some more challenging than others, and that's the challenge is making the best of it, making it from one day to the next. Sometimes just putting one foot in front of another.
Exactly.
And the hope is that if you're at least moving,
right.
that's something.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's really well put. That's really well put.
Yeah. So does the success of this film, this makes it possible for you to go on, do more? You said you had been in theater before. This was the first movie that you were involved in.
Yes.
And you're working on something else?
Yeah, we have another. It's actually an adaptation of another Dennis Johnson book. This one is a novel called Resuscitation of a Hanged Man. And Elizabeth and I are writing that one together. And we'll produce it later on. We're still in the script stage. It does help. I mean, we've been incredibly lucky with this film. The people involved were incredible. We were lucky enough to get distribution. And so it's been a real... project was sort of blessed from the beginning. We thought initially we were going to do a very small film, and it turned into, it just sort of grew. And
mm-hmm.
so we were fortunate.
And now, based on that success, the next time you're going to go look for money, you think it'll be easier?
I hope so. We haven't done that part yet. So we'll see. We're still in our little rooms writing the script. So we'll see when that comes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that success can be something of a mixed blessing, at least as far as the work is concerned. As I'm sure that we've all seen a lot of people who made good small films that were very successful, and then somebody came along and said, "I'm going to give you a big bucket
right.
of money for you to go make your next movie," and
right.
when in fact, maybe that really having a blank check is not always such a good thing.
Yeah, it may not be. There's a lot to be said with working on a tight budget. Makes you reach a little harder, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate
thanks for having
it.
Me.
And I certainly would recommend to people that you try to see the movie Jesus Son. It'll be shown as part of the Overlooked Film Festival on Saturday night at 7 at the Virginia Theater here in Champaign, Urbana. So you can see it that way, but it's also on video and on DVD out there for you to rent if you would like to do it that way.